All right, this is the Cafe Racer Podcast, episode 124 for January 27th, 2018. I'm Crash.
And I'm Steven.
And I'm Jess.
Yeah, we didn't figure out who was going to say what in what order. So we didn't even have music, and we still botched it a little bit. Yay! So everyone, if you're listening, we've got a bunch of people from Patreon on. Alex, Scott, Jeds, Ken, Steve, Doug. It's like a whole big group. We're doing the monthly Patreon hangout, and this is kind of a taste of what you would get if you supported us on Patreon. So, yeah, here we are. How's everybody doing?
Nobody say anything. Everybody be super quiet.
There's actually no one really there.
Now go back in and add like the crickets sound. Like, how's everybody doing?
Just Crash and I making a bunch of different voices, you know, like,
I'm great. Joined by Mickey Mouse. Oh boy.
We're all here.
Yeah, so this is pretty fun. Just before we started the recording, Steve Grasso, you guys went to a show. What'd you guys do?
So myself and Ham and Cheese, Scott and Doug, we were all at the Dania Beach Vintage Motorcycle Festival, which turned out to be a really nice day. There was a lot of cool bikes there. Talked to a lot of people that we all know and met some new people and did a little recording with Scott and Doug and got to talk to some of the guys from the Vintage Iron Club that had some cool bikes there. What'd you guys think? You saw some neat stuff?
Yeah, it was very cool. This is my second year to go. And most important lesson is just because it's overcast does not mean you can't get sunburned. It was awesome. It was awesome. I mean, there's basically it's like four big, you know, park baseball diamonds covered in motorcycles.
Oh, wow.
And they have it all subdivided up into European bikes, you know, Japanese bikes, Harleys, and then they're just all clustered into giant piles. And you just wander around and spend hours and hours looking at all these amazing bikes, you know, pre-war Beamers and 1919 Harley Davidsons, and then every motorcycle imaginable from the Japanese invasion.
Yeah, there were some really rare bikes there too that I don't know if you guys caught it, but toward the front, where the street was, where the guys from the Vintage Iron Club, Jonathan, he's there with his brothers every year, and they have all these really weird oddities. Like, he's got this clown bike that was ridden by a clown from the Shriners for 30 years, like holds a record for the smallest motorcycle ridden by a human being. But he also had, oh yeah, it's bizarre. He had a Rickman CR though, a 900 SS Rickman CR. That there was probably only 70 kits made by Craig Vetter for that bike. And it's got a Rickman frame in it with the Cowie 900 motor. And oh, it's super rare. If you look up Rickman CR, he had one there in excellent condition. And the bike's actually, it's not painted, it's gel coat. The whole thing's fiberglass. That and Dave Plotkin had a Norton Works racer that was a barn find that he found in a barn in Texas, and it's in their original condition as he found it.
So really quick, which, Jess, what do you think about this bike? I've got it up on my...
Why do you always go there, Jess?
it does look a little phallic.
You have knit it. It's interesting. It's a...
What color? Are you looking at one that is it green, the one you're looking at?
Yeah. Nice.
I mean, it looks like you're one of the cool things. Bike. What was your
also at the show was to go look at all the bikes that drove in on from the street bikes that came in. I think we spent just as much time in the parking lot looking at all the other bikes that drove in. It was pretty fun. Great time.
That's always a great part of that show, is that main drag there where everyone's parked their bikes. I noticed too there were a couple of those ridiculous baggers too that you have the air suspension that lay flat on the ground.
Like the 30-inch front wheel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how about you, Scott? What was your favorite thing?
I mean, Triumph Land, you know, every time, right? There's got to be like, 40 or something vintage 60s and 70s Triumphs. And they just, you know, I keep coming back to it.
The Triumphs and the Nortons are always fun to look at. I like that. You know, the Jap bikes, it's usually the same bikes every year. There were a couple... Doug pointed out a couple of turbo Kawasaki's that were pretty neat.
Nice.
Yeah, some nice BSAs. Yeah. There was a Vincent there. There was a Velocette there.
Does anybody notice, like, I've always wondered this ever since I started looking at motorcycles beyond, you know, being like a little kid. And everybody says the phrase Jap bikes. And, like calling someone a Jap is totally racist, but saying Jap bike is like totally fine with everyone. It's weird.
It's not, it's probably not fine with everyone. It's fine with the motorcycle community and us to the lesser extent, but I'm sure there are people out there that get really offended by that.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know. Let me call Chuck a Jap next time and see how he feels about it.
Yeah. He's only like a half.
I totally have no comment on the situation.
Okay. So
yeah, so that was today's fun. I got to test out the Moscow Moto backpack.
Oh yeah, you know, the Nomad tank bag thing.
Yeah, the Nomad. Tested it out as a backpack, and you know, it worked great. A lot of storage room in it.
Today was San Diego's Mods versus Rockers, and Jess, did we go?
No.
Why?
The Navy.
Why?
Yeah, because the Navy made me go to
the
work.
Mods probably won because you weren't there.
Probably. But yeah, so I had to work today. I'm getting ready to leave in like a month, and we're just pretty much full tilt 12-hour days. And except for today, we worked like 8 hours. We didn't even work 8 hours, actually. We only worked till like one. A couple weeks ago, no, last weekend, the same night of the like women's march, Cerberus Moto hosted a safety night, like a motorcycle safety night. I actually had a couple of friends be like, women's safety night, like, what is that? Like, are they going to hand out cans of mace or something? Like,
is there something?
Yeah. So we went there, and it was like almost an all-day event. It was like from noon to nine, and we stopped by there. Do you want to talk about it a little? Wow.
They were safe.
They were safe. So Cerberus has started selling gear and parts and stuff from different people, and they've started selling this from this manufacturer of motorcycle gear called IXS. I've never heard of it before in my life.
Yeah, you have. We talked to them at AIM 2 years ago.
No, you probably. I didn't.
They were based. The distributor was based out of Deerfield Beach. We went in the booth. The problem was we sat and looked at their stuff. We didn't try anything on, but to me, it was the same issue we were having with a lot of the other manufacturers, where the sizes were really limited.
Oh well, the sizes of what they have. Yeah, so the IXS like reps were there, and they had a pretty decent selection of sizes, especially in women's gear, because it was a women's night. And Jess found a pair of gloves that she really likes that they didn't have in her size, little tiny baby hands. but they're gonna get her a pair.
Yeah.
You know, they're really reasonably priced.
And I have.
Yeah, I mean, like they were basically like imagine like a soft shell jacket. That's what the material of the back of the gloves was made of, and they had a leather palm and like a fleece interior with a like a knuckle protector inside the glove, like a hard plastic.
Yeah, there's some.
Oh
what
yeah,
was that brown?
It's called Russ Brown Motorcycle Attorneys. I don't know. I don't know if they're only in California, but they're they brought a lot of cleavage on a single individual. Her face said late 50s. Her
eight.
Yeah. Except for the skin. Said
okay.
Leather wallet.
Yeah. Wait, 18 and
like, sure what? You sure it wasn't his wife? Now we're making fun of some guy's wife. That's not nice.
I don't know. There's a guy that goes to some of the progressive the IMS shows that like he's like super muscly, like ripped, and like makes the wackiest looking custom bikes. And his wife is plastic from head to toe and looks insane.
Yeah. What I don't get is on a women's safety night, why wouldn't they have some guy there like in chaps for all the women?
Right.
So they got. Right.
I guess Russ Brown
That's
Motorcycle.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I will let them.
Have a Chippendales dancer there, like, you know, talking about motorcycle safety.
That looks like Chris Farley.
Yeah. I love that episode with Patrick Swayze and Chris Farley. That's
right.
Such a good Saturday Night Live episode.
So was it, you think it was effective, this class? I mean, did they actually teach anything or was it kind of boring?
So the Russ Brown, but later in the night they had, coincidentally, that I had when I, and she was a really good instructor. I dirt bikes at that. So she was a good instructor, did the classwork. So she came by and she said, like, safety is very good stuff.
And like she talked about getting education. Like there were a bunch of people. She kind of like took a poll. She's like, who in the room has a motorcycle license? Who's riding without one? Who's ever been to a safety course? She's asked a few questions and then she was like, okay, cool. What would you do? Like she, you know, phrased it like, so you're going in a turn and you realize you're starting to run wide of the turn. What do you do? And, you know, everybody kind of threw out answers that were different kinds of wrong. And she's like, okay, no, this is actually what you should do in this situation. And she's like, this is why it's important to go to classes because, you know, we all kind of have these assumptions or whatever, you know, something our buddy told us about, you know, what to do or whatever that may or may not actually factual and based in like any kind of like proven test situation. And so she talked about some techniques, but she also like talked about different, you know, advocated a lot of different things. She wasn't just there beating the total control drum.
No.
You know, she was like, hey, you know, there's dirt bike classes. Dirt bike classes will help you on the street, and here's why. Does anybody think wheeling is learning how that all works and getting that throttle control, you know, being able to control your throttle to that level will help you on the street, and here's why. So she, her little spiel was pretty good. I was excited to meet her because, you know, Jess was like, oh, she's going to be there, and she's the one who taught me how to ride my motorcycle, and I thought that was cool. So we chatted for a bit and everything was going okay. And then I was like, well, what kind of motorcycle do you ride? And she's like, oh, I have a KTM 690 Duke. And I was like, cool. Or no, she have a KTM. I was like, which one is it? And she goes, the orange one out there. I was like, yeah, I know. Ooh. It's a KTM. Thanks. And she goes, oh, it's a 690 Duke. I was like, oh, that's a cool bike, you know? And then I was like, yeah, I'm kind of interested in maybe getting a 1290 Duke or, you know, one of its variants. And she's like, that's really excessive. And my response was, yeah, that's
exactly what he said. That's the point. That's you what I want.
What was her response?
She didn't like that.
She got really kind of like preachy about how that's too much bike and that the person that runs the school she works for is a motorcycle racer and he thinks it's too much bike. And
everybody should.
Yeah, and that like it's almost a $20,000 bike. I could buy a $10,000 bike and spend $10,000 or less getting it set up perfectly for me, and I'd be super happy. And blah blah blah. And I'm like, yeah, I guess I could do that, but I want a ridiculous bike with every electronic aid known to man. Yeah. And when I mentioned cornering lights, she was like, wait, what? And then I told her, and she's like, oh, I want the C.
You know that. What kills me about that comes from a very uninformed position. So her opinion is formulated by somebody who races a middleweight bike, which, you know what, it's fine. And middleweights are fast as shit. So like when you see some guy riding around town on a GSXR 600 or a 600 RR or an FC6 or anything in that middleweight class and somebody's going, oh, that's a small bike, you know, yeah, take one of those on the track and then come back and tell me the same thing. So it goes the same way for lightweight class motorcycles too. The guy that's got a 400 cc anything, or for that matter a 250 cc like a RS 250 or an NSR 250, those bikes are capable and they're super fun on roads like Deals Gap. But for her to come and tell you it's excessive, first of all, she's probably never ridden anything that big before. I took that bike off road for a really long time, so you can't tell me it won't do that. It's very much an opinionated answer that kind of pisses me off. And I would throw hot, fruity flavored tea on her.
It definitely rubbed us the wrong way to where, you know, by the end of the night, we're like stuck up, be happy, accept that the things that we want are what we want.
Yeah. Like I get saying that's excessive. Like I totally understand when somebody says, yeah, I think I want to get a 1290 Souq R. And you go, that's kind of excessive. And when they go, yeah, isn't it?
You should leave then it be at
like,
that.
All right, I guess I'm not going to change any opinions here. Like, that's obviously what he's looking for.
Yeah.
It's like if somebody said to me, I think I'm going to go buy a Ferrari 458. Like, that's a lot of car, man. I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm like, okay, cool. Knock yourself out. Like, what do you say to that? You know, okay, have fun. It's your life. Make your, you know, I hope you don't wrap it around a tree and die.
It's all relative, though, too. I can tell you right now, look at, and he might come on the show. I was talking about Spencer. You know, he's riding the 1090 right now, mm-hmm. right? Came off the 690. When he had the 690, he thought that was perfect size for him until we did, you know, 15 days and some of that was on the highway. Then you really want to have something a little bit bigger that's more comfortable, that's got cruise control and all these other things on it. He's on the 1090 now and he's happy as a clam.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, Scott rode a 250 around more of Florida than most people ride on their Harley. And
yes,
it took him, I mean, he was happy on that bike. It took him a while to figure out, maybe I want something a little bit bigger. Do you feel your bike successive, Scott?
The bike I have now?
Yeah. No, not at all, right?
The thing is, some people fall in this trap of figuring out what's good for them and then deciding that that's good for everybody else too.
Yeah.
And that sounds like it's exactly what this lady did. She knew what was really good for her, and she's probably exactly right. And so she unfortunately went the next step and decided that's perfect for everybody else too. And what I don't want, they don't, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
stop liking what I don't like.
She's very.
But what pisses me off about the whole thing is she's an educator. She should know better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what really rubbed us too. Yeah.
Like, she's also really small. Like, I don't short. So, like, I can understand why a bike that size is problematic. Like, there, it's just, it's a matter of, like, yeah, okay, if you're a really good rider, you can do it. But it's still, like, a long reach down to the ground. On a positive note, though, they had a raffle there, and somebody won from Honda a free rider class. You know, I don't know what Honda has, like, I guess a riding. I don't know if it's a Motorcycle Safety Foundation based course or Total Control or something else, but they have a that's like that. And somebody won a free beginner class, so like the whole thing was covered. Somebody won. I don't know. A bunch of people won a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. And right there in the video, which, you know, most of you, is a Cerberus Moto coffee cup that's like the size of half a pot of coffee.
I won.
Yeah,
I won in the raffle.
Yeah, she won that. And she won this, which is hard to see, but it's a...
Oh, it's a helmet hook.
Yeah, it's a helmet and jacket hook. So like the guy, one of the guys that is a member there makes these and sells them in the shop. And so he donated one to be raffled off. As like a package.
I thought that was a Knuter valve adjustment tool.
Well, you know, it doubles as that. But when you're done, you know, when you're done adjusting the Knuter valve and refilling your blinker fluid, then you can.
Then you can.
Yeah.
So I think you guys were talking about the people who make those previously, right? We were talking about their Instagram account or something.
Yeah. So
the people who make that hook.
Jess decided that this is a pussy grabber.
It is. That's, you grab her by the pussy. It goes right under.
Hey, that's legal now. You're allowed to grab him by the pussy now.
Yeah,
that's completely legal.
We got a president that advocates that. So,
oh my god, there's a lot of hands on faces right there.
Are you seriously, Jens? Are you embarrassed? Are you kidding me?
No, I think it's fucking awesome.
Hey, can we have Crash? Can we get them to OEM that for us as the Cafe Racer Podcast Pussy Grabber?
And maybe we could magnetize it so it could be the Cafe Racer Podcast Pussy Magnet.
Yeah.
Nice. Anyway, so we have a shelf for our helmets that's already in the garage. So when we're going to give away some stuff here soon, and we have a bunch of stuff to give away actually,
yeah,
but this is going to be one of the things that we give away here soon, is this helmet and jacket hook.
I'll probably.
In all seriousness, is that made from an actual wrench or is it something lighter weight?
No, it's an inch and three quarter, like Pittsburgh, probably from Harbor Freight.
Oh, it's not metric?
No, it's not metric. If you've got a metric bike, then you're going to want the 34 millimeter version.
Exactly. You got a 17 millimeter.
I was going to say, it's not for a Jesus nut on a helicopter?
No. No, my nuts are way bigger than that.
Nice. And you've been hanging around Jess way too long.
Yeah.
No, I'm an aviation electronics tech. I have the smallest nuts at work, like 5/32 sometimes.
Those are some pretty small nuts.
Mm-hmm. That's what she said.
So did you get any feedback from the Mods versus Rocker thing? Did you hear anything about it at all or not?
I saw a few videos on some friends, but...
How was the turnout?
It was that many.
It's been pretty cold here.
Yeah. Well, I also think, too, that this has kind of peaked a little bit for this. Mm-hmm. It'll probably come around again.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You guys got any thoughts on that in your local areas when it comes to that kind of thing, like cafe bike get-togethers or the...
There's one here.
Distinguished Gentleman's Ride is the only thing that happens around here that's cafe-themed.
I like how everybody immediately speaks exactly the same time. Alex, go first.
I think the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride is the only thing that happens around here that's cafe themed.
It's so
well, even here in South Florida, that had less of a turnout than it usually has. And honestly, I don't really know. You know, the whole point of that ride is to raise money. I don't know how many people actually raise money on that or just
we
go for the ride.
Never...
I have the right, first year I went, I donated, but I did. I haven't gotten pledges or anything. Ken, did you? I don't know. Ken or Jez or somebody said something else.
That wasn't me.
All right, Shaggy.
I was saying something. There's a Rochester Motor Social about 30 minutes away. They do it once a month here in the summertime.
All right.
And a ton of cafe racer bikes show up.
Yeah.
You know, that, and the what's kind of nice about the scene that's remained here is it's more about vintage bikes. So it's kind of open. It's not necessarily just cafe bikes. It's anything. you'll see a lot of bikes from the 80s that were standards or even 80s sport bikes. So the vintage Iron Club continues to promote just a vintage motorcycle night.
Is my bike
and
vintage
there's
yet?
Everything there, you know.
It's a 91.
It's vintage.
Like, it's getting there.
25 years is what they use. I think for the show we were at today, it might be 35 years. I'm not sure. I know that I had the Gucci in that show a few years ago when the Cafe Racer was the theme of the show, which then it didn't matter on the age, but I haven't been able to put that bike back in the show because of the age. It has to be, I want to say 35 years yeah. for that bike, for that show.
Oh, so while we were at the, you know, Women's Safety Night, you know, you guys kind of got to hear about it on Slack. Jess got to ride the Van 200, the little Suzuki.
Yeah, it was so much fun. And the brakes are so nice.
How would you compare riding the Van to the 1991 shitbox Ninja 2 or Nighthawk 250?
I love my...
There's nothing wrong with Nighthawks, all right?
But
I love my Nighthawk.
The Van was accelerating quicker, too much, and new buttons that I didn't even know existed.
Well, for example, you know, the turn signal switch on your bike is like, doesn't have a button in it. So it's like left, right, and then centered is off. Yeah. You know, every other motorcycle now, you know, you click it left and you push it in to cancel. She was like, how does this work?
Are there any bikes that just turn the blinker off for
you? Harleys do that.
My bike does.
Called Harleys.
Yeah.
KTM does too. Yeah. I think most of the big bikes now have self-canceling turn signals. BMW does, the mm-hmm. Goldwing does. You know, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, I've the last ride I went by myself, I had the right time.
Everybody's behind you, flipping you off and
yeah,
beeping their
like,
horns.
Where is she going?
This bitch does right, not know where she's going.
Why can't she go any faster?
Badlands makes a kit that you can put auto-canceling on any bike.
Mm-hmm.
How does it work?
I'm actually going to get it for my...
Is it a timer?
It's a little box, and it's... Yeah, it's basically just a timer. I think it runs for like 9 seconds, and then it'll shut off.
Huh.
They also, I think they make one that's based on your speed. Like if it detects the bike is speeding up, it'll shut off too, but that's a way...
That's the way the KTM works with both. It's got both a timer and it measures distance somehow. I think it's 175 feet.
Well, your KTM has an accelerometer, has like several accelerometers in it.
Yeah, well... That bike's got a ton of technology in it, and now the new ones with the TFT display have even more.
Yeah, it's like riding around with an iPad but, for a screen.
Are you seriously considering a 1290 still?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we're kind of thinking, you know, with me going on deployment, I've been getting the Bonneville, or getting all the parts needed, really, to get the Bonneville the best I can set up for Jess to ride while I'm gone. And she's, like, already planning modifications, that, like, paint, and, like, she's pretty much decided she would keep
mine.
It. Even though she's never ridden it except
me. So it's hers and you have to replace it already.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we were thinking about she sells the Nighthawk and well, so the Cerberus, Dave at Cerberus used Cerakote, which, you know, gun fans will know all about. It's used for painting, you know, custom paint jobs on guns. He used Cerakote to paint a XS650 in like this really cool flat blue. So we were thinking about doing flat army green Cerakote all over the Bonneville, you know, where it's painted.
Yeah, but don't you have to cook it though? Cerakote's got to be heated, right?
There's two different kinds. There's a spray on, just air dries, and there's a bake on.
Oh.
Yeah, I had no idea.
So to go from flat army tan to flat army green.
Yep.
Yes.
And then
so no pink then.
Do you really think that I want?
Yeah, I do.
Why don't you do a chia pet on it? I think it'd
be good.
That's good.
Spread that shit all over it and let it grow.
This has some pink bikes. Awesome.
There's
some
pink,
awful pink bikes.
There's a pink sparkly Grom here in the town that we see.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I could have sworn there was a pink bagger there today, laying on the ground.
Like
it was over by the baseball diamond. You guys like remember seeing that? Yeah, it was like slammed because the hydraulics were like bled out or the air was taken out of it. But then there was some obnoxious bastard with a Indian that had some sound system and exhaust on it. Every 5 minutes, he kept revving the thing.
Oh.
I don't know what the hell they were doing. But there was a couple new dealerships there, you know, with new bikes, and they had a Van there. I got to see it and look at it. It was kind of neat. I like it. That's a cool bike.
When
I
rode the GSX 250R. While I rode and kind of led me and Jess's little demo ride. She just followed me around. And while I was on the GSX, like, I was pretty happy. I didn't feel, we were just on city streets. We never got on the freeway. I didn't feel like, oh, this bike is a dog, you know, like it felt fine. It was fun to ride. nice and like it doesn't accelerate. It's crappy. Like your Nighthawk. It
feels what exactly. size is that? The GSX 250, is that the same size as the Van or bigger?
No,
I mean, size wise. Yeah.
And then so we rode around, and when we got back, I got on the Van. And the Van feels like the tank is about 2 inches wide. Like your knees feel like they're touching each other. It's such a skinny little bike. And the seat's so big.
This is fat.
Yeah. It's an odd looking little bike, but
it's got little big fat wheels, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like the
TW200. The wheels are like disproportionately ballooned or something almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was really fun to ride, but I didn't ride it as much as I rode the GSX. And I think that Jess would have really liked the GSX. She just thinks it's hideously ugly.
Hey, so on another topic real quick, did any of you guys follow the Dakar rally at all? Doug's shaking his head. Yes. So
yeah, get off mute here. But yeah, no, I was trying to watch the daily updates via the Dakar site. And it's just those guys are just amazing. Just amazing.
Well, they went let me tell you who's amazing is, and I didn't even know they had this class. So they separate the bikes out into something called Malay Moto. Do you know what that is? Mm-hmm. These are guys that run the race by themselves.
Oh, yeah,
they
yeah.
They have no
yeah.
support crew.
Yeah, they're the Ironman guys. Yeah.
Yeah, so Lyndon Poskett got number 2 in Malay Moto.
How many riders were there?
Wow.
Like 60 something, and I think he finished 35th overall, which is just finishing the race is huge. You know, you get a medal for finishing. But to finish number 2 in Malay Moto was really an accomplishment, because I saw some of the pictures. I was following on Instagram, and he did a bunch of videos on there. You know, everybody else, all these factory riders, they come back to the bivouac at night, they eat and go to bed. And then they have enough time where they can get their roll chart and do it. So Lyndon's got to come in, break down his bike, fix it. I mean, he was replacing like shock fork seals and stuff and all kinds of stuff throughout the night, then eating and doing his roll chart navigation, then finally hitting the sack and then getting up in the morning and doing it all over again.
Yeah. I don't know how he did that.
Yeah. 14 days. They canceled one of the stages. He did 14 stages. And we're trying to get him on the show to talk about it, but, that was pretty awesome. I don't know how many of you guys actually follow Dakar. If you don't, it's just besides the bikes, the trucks are really cool to watch too. And
I love the support
this
trucks.
This is the first year. Well, those are actually the big trucks are race trucks. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a 3-man crew racing that truck. It's crazy. They had one of them flip over, and a competitive team stopped and helped them flip the truck back over to get them back on the road. It was kind of neat. Anyway, I just wanted to give you guys that little announcement about Lyndon finishing
we lost
second.
In there
that'd be cool if you could get.
What was that, Scott?
So that'd be great if you could get him on the show.
Yeah, I have a dialogue with him every once in a while, either through Instagram or ADV Rider, and hopefully he'll be able to pop on one day. It might be one of these things where we just end up having to interview him off the show schedule because of where he's at, and then kind of have him. Have that audio for you.
Yeah. So, Steve Case, have you done any motorcycle things lately?
Not really. I've been working on the 360. I'm taking it to Syracuse Cycle Expo next month. It's pretty much the only motorcycle event in the wintertime.
Yeah.
For us up here.
Where are you?
It's a giant swap meet, and there's a motorcycle show. I'm going to enter the 360 in the show. It's a lot of fun. I've gone every year.
That's done, years. Steve. Did you finish the 360?
Yeah. Yep. It's done.
Okay. Cool. Are you in Vermont?
I'm in upstate New York.
So, Jed, you're in Vermont, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay. So, are you guys going to try to do the Mid-Atlantic BDR with us when we do it?
I probably can't get the time off to do it.
I'm pretty
I'm going
booked.
I'm going down to Myrtle Beach Bike Week this year.
I think I got to plot it out. I'm thinking we might be able to do that thing in 3 or 4 days. I don't know for sure, but I'll know as soon as I get all the maps this weekend. For it, because they released it on February 1st, but I'm super excited about this because it's the first time we're going to have anything like this on the East Coast. And for you guys, it would be really easy to get to. For us, it's a little bit of a drive, but we're talking about maybe trailering up and, you know, just going in one truck with the bikes on a trailer and then parking the trailer someplace. I kind of looked at what the auto train would be, but where the auto train dumps off, it's 5 hours to the start of the BDR. So that's kind of crazy.
It's like nothing for Jed.
I think
though.
It goes like 10 minutes from my house.
You going to come with us, maybe?
Alex,
or like,
yeah.
Yeah. All right. I think this one's going to be something that would be easy to do on a big bike. It doesn't look like it's that hard. It's certainly not as challenging as anything in Colorado or New Mexico. But you know, it's the Northeast. So a lot of it might be, there might, if it's wet, it would be problematic with mud from what some of the route scatters we're talking about, but we'll see. We're really excited about it because I know you guys caught it on Slack. We're hosting one of the movie premieres down here in South Florida, which if you go on the website, you might be able to find a premiere near you at a dealership. And the movies are about anywhere from 70 to 90 minutes long. They're documentaries on the scouting crew and how they did the route. So it'd be kind of cool if you can find one close by and you'll be able to see it. Otherwise, you can buy the DVD and the maps from Butler Maps or Tour Tech. It'd be good to have some of you guys going with us if we plan a trip. I know Doug and I have been talking about it, and I don't know if Scott would want to try to take his bike on it or not. I know he's taking that thing off road, so.
Yeah, he's gotten a little smarter since then.
Depends.
I doubt that.
On the ride, you know. I was looking at that Florida rally that you're going to be doing and looking at some of the pictures of the roads of the Florida rally, and that looks probably too much for this kind of bike. So if the Mid-Atlantic thing is worse, probably not.
Well, let me tell you, on the Florida rally, they said that it was doable on a big bike two up. The last one I did was not doable two up. As a matter of fact, we had turned a road. We started off out of St. Augustine, went down a main like highway, then turned onto this farm road that was this black, loamy, thick dirt. And there was a guy on a Beamer with his wife on the back. And he must have fell five times. And finally, she got off the back of the bike and gave him one of these and walked back to the road. And then, you know, I helped this guy get his bike back up. We made the end of this loamy dirt road, turned onto another road that was 13 miles of sugar sand. So, and from what I found out afterwards, that a lot of people skip that section. Well, dumbass here, I did it, you know.
I mean, on the ADV rider page of the Florida Rally, it says that that thing's got a 70% attrition rate.
I think part of that reason is people just quit. I don't think it's because they have a problem. I mean, I knew a lot of people that were like, and they're, listen to Scott, they're considering the whole ride a finish. I didn't finish because I got to the West Coast and I had to get back home. So on Sunday, instead of riding all the way back to the East Coast, I rode home. So I would be considered a fail as well. I don't think that attrition rate has to do with people that can't actually finish the ride. I think it's just a logistics thing for a lot of people. They don't want to drive all the way back Sunday, especially guys that come from the West Coast. You know what I mean?
So one thing I've been thinking about, and I haven't really talked to Doug about this, but I've been thinking about, you know, maybe trying to find an older scrambler that's, you know, cheap, something in the $2,000 or $3,000 range that I can take out on these dirt things that Doug likes to go on and stuff, and that you guys are talking about. Because I mean, this bike is my transportation to get to work and back, right? And when we go on the long rides on the road, I need this. So I can't wreck it, you know?
Yeah.
But if I had something that I could bash up and not worry about throwing it on the ground and just pick it back up and keep going, I think I'd be more likely to want to jump on some of these rallies you guys are talking about. I just can't do that on my main bike, you know?
Instead of a scrambler, what about a middleweight, like, dual sport, something that's a little older?
Because scramblers are cool, man.
Yeah, I know, but they're also, I think you're
what shape is every motor? Both motorcycles I've ever owned have been what shape?
Scotty, what
shape? Look what's behind
you. You should have never got rid of that TU250X. You should have kept that, throw some knobs on it, and run it.
Perfect.
Why did you get rid of it?
No, he's definitely regretting getting rid of that bike. He's told me that before. I said, man, I bet you wish you still had that bike. So yeah, fun. I still wish I had that bike.
Bike is so fun.
I don't know how many times I told Crash that bike would have looked cool all scrambled out.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what Justin did with his. So yeah. The evidence is right behind him.
Yeah.
So, Alex, I can't remember what bike you ride.
I have a CB500X.
Oh, right. Okay. So, yeah, we've been talking about rally raid stuff and Slack and all kinds of Have you done anything cool on your bike lately? Or boring?
I cleaned the chain today.
Whoa! Woo-hoo! I suck at that. I'm really bad about doing that.
Huzzah for maintenance.
Chain cleaning, what's that?
Not just lube it.
Clean those things?
Oh, it's bad. With the salt around here.
Oh, I bet.
I gotta clean it like every 250 miles.
That bike's going to look so badass when you get a rally raid kit on that. I'm telling you.
I don't know if I'm going to do the suspension. I'm definitely going to do the skid plate and some of their other pieces, though.
The suspension's the big cost, but if you're not going to really be hammering it, you might not need it, you know?
I'm also short and don't really want to deal with a 2-inch higher bike.
Yeah. No, they're very capable when they're built. Extremely capable bikes.
I love that bike.
Morgan took one up the Rubicon Trail.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was modified, though, with the rally raid kit completely, or not?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
So, Jess, what do you think of this one? Your bike doesn't look like a dick, so that's a plus.
Sweet.
Or maybe it's not a plus. I don't know.
I guess Ken got lost, huh? Or got bored.
Yeah, he had to go put his kids to bed.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what he said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's talk to Jeds. Jeds has got some big trips planned here. Jeds, what are you planning?
Yeah, I've been kind of saving him for last.
obviously the goal this season is to hit 30,000 miles. I'm going to be starting out. Huh?
How long's your season?
It doesn't January till December.
Okay. You said season. You could say year.
Year.
Yeah, but I have probably eight good solid months of riding. So I can't ride very much in November, December. This year we got a huge, as Steve, we got dumped on with snow and some extreme temps. And this month's been all right, but been better January. I got about 300, 400 miles on, but it's not good yet. But anyway, so March, I'm going down to Florida. I'm going to Daytona Bike Week. I'm taking my truck down. Kind of deciding on what bike to take. I'm pretty set on taking the Harley down. And then I'll be unloading in Port Orange. I'm staying with some family down there. And then check Daytona out for probably like one day because it's Daytona and I'm not a Harley guy, so I don't think I'll like it too much.
Says the guy who's taking his Harley down.
Yeah,
this big orange Harley.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, you know, the Harley guys call this a crotch rocket, I guess.
He's gonna be riding down that street on his Harley, saying, "You Harley guys suck."
Right.
Ride a real bike, pussy.
Hey, listen, don't just listen to me, Jeds. Avoid Main Street. Everything east of US-1. Go out west by the track. There's a lot of cool stuff out there. Like, I'm going to try to do some demo rides. I want to ride a new Goldwing and a bunch of other stuff.
Jeds, don't listen to him. Go right on the beach. Get out on the sand.
Get out on the sand?
They open you come on the beach in Daytona. It's open for traffic in some spots, and it's different than sand down here.
What, see if you can hit a bimbo. What else are you going to be able to
drive a Harley on the sand?
Yeah.
and then I'm going to go hang out with Amimoto down in the Fort Lauderdale area from that. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but Monday through Wednesday. I'm not sure what we have planned yet. Do you guys have an idea, Scott, Doug?
You were talking about maybe wanting to go to the Keys, so we could do the Keys one day. I think you'd like to see that. It won't look probably like it looks like in your mind, but it's okay. It's still pretty cool.
Are you guys talking about the week? Are you guys talking about the week of Bike Week doing that, or the week after? After the St. Patrick's Day weekend, or that week before?
Week before.
I think it's the week after, right? You're talking about March 16th or something like that?
Yeah.
I forget. Anyway.
So Bike Week starts on the 9th and ends on the 18th. I'm going to be there the weekend of the 9th. The 200 is actually on the 17th or the 15th, I think, that weekend where St. Patrick's is. I don't think I'm going to be able to make that because of a wedding, possibly.
I think he was talking about being here the 12th, 13th, 14th.
Okay. Actually.
So it's the weekend before.
That's when my reservations are set, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So we got a lot of stuff we can take him and just drive around. I don't know if he wants to see A1A up and down the beach or if he'd rather go out Central Florida or whatever. But
I just want to ride, put miles on. That's what I want to do. So wherever, whenever, I don't care.
You guys should do that. The Miami City Escape that Doug and I are looking at.
What's that? Scott.
It's on the Rever app under rides. You know where it says Discover and there's rides. It's one of the Roadrunner magazine rides. So it's you guys have done part of it. It's south of the lake, mm-hmm. all the way down to Tamiami Trail. It's a big loop in there.
Well, I thought we'd take them down to Key West and spend a half an hour there and then head back again.
That was a fun day.
Just such
we left at 10 in the morning, got to the first of the Keys and had lunch, and Doug is like, I've never been to Key West. Okay, let's go. And we got down there and spent 45 minutes in Mallory Square, turned around, and came home. And it was raining. That was the worst day to go. And we
went
to Key West in the rain, got home in the dark. Why? Because it was there.
It's such a boring, boring ride, too.
It's 35 miles an hour.
We can take him to Joni's Crab House and have the best key lime pie in the state.
Mm. Yeah. Joni's would be good. Yep. Everglades City would be good. We could take him down. All the central south part of the state's really cool.
Yep.
Just take him on the only twisties. Yeah, the only curves in South Florida on Snake Road. You take him on there.
So. Yeah, right. Our twisties are when you change lanes.
Yeah. or get on and off the interstate. You know, that's
exactly.
Your tires will be square, Jez, by the time you get home.
Okay, good to know. I'll round them out when I get home.
Yeah.
Once spring sets in May.
If you're lucky.
Yeah.
We can like if you're going to be there the weekend before in Daytona and Doug's going to be there and Scott's going to be there, we'll definitely do some of those rides around the lake area just west of Daytona, because that's some nice riding. There's a lot of twisties through there, a lot of curve. I've got a lot of that mapped out. So I plan on being up there that first weekend. And I don't know, Doug, what you guys plan on doing. I'm going to camp in the infield at the racetrack.
I'm just going to hang around with you.
Okay. Because I think it's cheap, you know, and it's you don't got to try to find a hotel or any of that other crap.
He's going to teach you how to cook there in the field and lots of good stuff. So, yep.
He's going to teach you how to cook mugu gai pan chicken orange.
Yes. Chicken orange, mugu. Chicken pepper.
Don't make fun. That was fucking great.
So,
you're camping and you're doing gourmet food when you're camping. You're
fucking hot dogs, man. Listen, man. Lisa and Simon Thomas travel the whole world and they cook
hot dogs.
Fuck that hot dog shit.
He's having sushi and...
Yeah.
Steve has come a long way. At the first Overland Expo we went to, he made chili mac without any liquid except for the can of chili. Like, we didn't have butter. We didn't have milk. We didn't have water. We had a can of chili, the mac and cheese with the powdered cheese. And now he's like making sardine spaghetti and like...
Creme brulee.
Yeah.
Dude, let me tell you what was worse that first night. It was so cold when crashed the first night we were there, and I got up at like 2 o'clock in the morning. It was morning time because the moon was so bright. My tent was lit up.
Me too.
So I get up and I realize I don't have any coffee and I really want something hot to drink. So I boil some water and the only thing I had was orange flavored Metamucil.
That crap gets all clumpy.
Oh my God.
Dude, I didn't realize as soon as you put Metamucil in hot water, it turns into a thick gel. Yeah, it was disgusting. And I'm trying to spoon it out of my cup, and it was luckily I got out of the tent, and some dude across from me is like, you know, getting out of his tent going, like I'm up for the morning. And I'm like, yeah, it's like 2 o'clock. So he made coffee and we sat there and bullshitted and drank coffee. But yeah, it was pretty, there were people that were like, I think Christy said, I refused to eat that.
Yeah.
You know, when I made the
chili mac. We were talking about making it. She's like, I'm not going to eat that. I'm going to go hang out with my Moto Giorno snob.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, okay.
One of our buddies, Will, who ends up living down here now, I'm going to contact him about the Trans Florida Rally, but he brought these things called hardtack, which were these biscuits made with like sawdust and flour and shit. They were nasty. And that's what he was eating.
Civil War food, yeah.
Yeah,
like yeah, exactly. Civil War food.
This crap.
Listen, Scott, you're going to change your mind when I make this stuff and you got to eat it.
It was absolutely
delicious. We'll see about
Scott
that.
Scott only eats hamburgers. He only eats brown food. He doesn't eat anything but brown food.
Right. That chicken was phenomenal. What we're talking about, for you guys that don't know, is Lisa Thomas produces a cookbook called Dirty Dining, the Adventure Motorless whatever cookbook, but it's all stuff you can make in one pot while you're camping. And I learned a lesson that it was easier than carrying a bunch of freeze-dried food around, which actually is not that bad, some of the Mountain House stuff, but it'll constipate the hell out of you if you're not drinking a lot of water. I just emptied out my stuff, went to the grocery store, bought a few ingredients and like a package of pork, threw a bag of ice in one of my saddlebags, used it as a cooler and made like two nights meals that were phenomenal.
Yeah, it's funny. If you ever get a chance, if you go to a show where you meet Lisa, the cookbook's name is appropriate. You know, she rides off-road all year round and she is also just a filthy woman.
She's got such a potty mouth, she man. Does. It's not even funny. But watching her and Simon together is funny too. And when we were at the Overland Expo, they did a class where they were showing you how to prepare one of these wheels. And one of the things she carries around with her everywhere she goes is a package of curry, like three different flavors of curry. It'll keep for like 30 days in a Ziploc bag. I was surprised. I thought it would go bad not being refrigerated. It's a curry paste. So everything she makes has that as a base. And within like 15 minutes, she whipped up this green curry chicken. And it was like restaurant quality food. And no, you know, it doesn't make any rice or anything. She just made that and serves it in a bowl. And it was great. So we will be having that, Doug. We're not going to go to the local chicken wing restaurant. We're going to have some gourmet food there.
Oh, man.
We'll pick, We'll pick a couple recipes out of the book, and we'll grab the groceries, and we'll cook it on the infield. We'll shoot a little video, and we'll make Scott eat it.
You're not going to go to Crystal or Steak and Shake or Waffle House?
See, that's talking my language, man. You're camping, for God's sake. Waffle House.
Waffle House is pretty goddamn good, though. I'll tell you what.
There's so many Waffle Houses in Florida.
I'm hitting Waffle House when I'm down there. That and a freaking Bojangles.
Well, we're not really the South. I mean, don't get ahead of yourself with the Bojangles.
Well, I got to pass through North Carolina anyway, so.
Yeah, you can have it then. You guys don't have Waffle House in Vermont?
Oh, no, dude. We get Denny's. We have two of them in the state.
How about Huddle? You have a Huddle That's House, it. Sir? No.
Nope. I got nothing, man. I got trees and moose.
You got syrup. Plenty
it's
of maple syrup.
Yeah.
It's syrup. Yeah.
Scrapple with syrup. Yeah.
I'm a scrapple.
And some good riding roads.
Yeah, that's true.
Trade-offs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Florida, you especially in South Florida, you sacrifice. There's nowhere to ride here. I think Scott's probably found every road that's halfway decent to ride on. I mean, MSTA.
It's like there's nowhere to ride. There's nowhere to ride, but we do it anyway all year long.
Yeah. Well, that's the good part about
there's it. Nowhere to ride. Season.
Scotty.
What?
I've got a shitload of great roads.
You know, the podcast is
an
audio medium.
We still got to do that.
Yeah, it's all right.
We'll explain that. Jed's just took one of his fingers. I'm not really sure which one it was and waved it at Scott. It might have been some sort of hello or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It might have been a thumbs up, I think. It was a thumbs up. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Thumbs up.
Fuck, you're right on the money.
Hey, Jed's.
Yeah.
Aw.
Nothing but love for you.
Yeah, I think
We had a couple other announcements, didn't we, Crash? We're going to give away the Pack Talk, right?
Yeah, we are. Why don't you talk about that? You know more about it than I do.
So we have a brand new Cardo Systems Pack Talk, Scala Rider Pack Talk, which uses the new technology that the Sena 30S uses, this DMC. The mesh network. You don't have to worry about one guy being the main guy you're connected to, and if he leaves, this is all kind of seamless. People ride in and out of it. Brand new set, dual units. So there's two of them. And we're going to give it away to you guys on Patreon only. It's not open to anyone else.
Yeah, so by the time you hear this episode, there will be a link on caferacerpodcast.com/contest. You'll also see a contest for a Shoeberth helmet giveaway that's available for anyone, so feel free to enter there as well. But if you enter in the contest for the Cardo Pack Talk, I'll cross-check that off of our list of current patrons, and if you are a current patron, then you'll be actually entered to win. If you want to just become a patron before the contest is over, then you'll still be entered to win, just like everyone else. So go to patreon.com/caferacerpodcast to sign up. You can give any amount you want. There's a couple different levels that get different rewards. This Google Hangout that we're doing today is actually one of our Patreon-only things. Usually we wouldn't broadcast it, but this was just sort of like a, hey guys, this is what you guys could be joining in on, talking about bikes that look like dicks, talking about bikes that don't look like dicks. Cafe Racer podcast official pussy grabber, you know, all the best motorcycle highlights found here in the Cafe Racer podcast Patreon hangout.
We have a lot of fun on Slack too. There's a lot going on in there. Plus we were able to plan trips and stuff like that. So it's a lot of fun.
I mean, like before the show, Jess was saying every time she gets on, there's like 100 missed messages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like a few times, you know, we'll kind of like joke around that like while somebody's at work, we're going to get their notifications up to like 100. So everybody's like talking a bunch to me.
What's really funny is, man, I had my notification thing like dinging at work and you guys were blowing it up one morning. It was really
mute conversation. Mute conversation.
I'm in a meeting and I'm trying to turn the damn thing off or like put it in sleep mode or something. And the chief is like, what do you got going on over there? Is it something urgent you got to worry about? I'm like, oh, no, it's all right.
The farthest from urgent possible, actually.
Yeah.
It's a super important conversation about I have to have right now.
Okay, so Crash, did you happen to have a conversation with Liza in the last few days?
No, I Miller? Didn't. Have you?
Yeah, I talked to her and
okay,
I was
cool.
kind of.
Yeah, I figured she'd reach out to one of us.
Yeah, she was going to call you either way, she said. But what's going on is we're looking industry-wide in the motorcycle industry, there's been a slump in ridership, new riders, sales. Even Harley Davidson's fourth quarter reportings from last year were pretty low.
Yeah.
And they think it has to do a lot with the boomers aging out and the millennials not really giving a shit about motorcycles, seeing it as them as more of an accessory than actually riding them.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, you know, my age and younger, I'm technically like one of the first year for millennials, I guess. But a lot of people younger than me like take forever to even get their driver's license.
Really? That's the really bizarre thing. I remember when I was 15, like chomping at the bit to get my restricted. I had already bought a car,
yeah,
you know, waiting for this. And now there are people that are like 18, 19 going, yeah, I don't really need it. You know, I'll call Uber. Yeah, my friend drives me or my mom takes me places.
With stuff like Uber and like all of the like the heavy integration with social media of everything, like I don't necessarily need to leave my house to like kind of hang out with some of my friends. I mean, here we are. We didn't have to go to Vermont to all hang out with Jeds or go down to Florida to hang out with,
thank God,
you know, those guys. Like,
yeah, you don't want to come.
So like, you know, you guys didn't all have to come to beautiful, sunny, incredible riding, incredible weather, San Diego, to hang out with me. We just get online, right? So, you know, the kids that are younger than me, are like way more into that than I am even.
But a lot of the people on the, a lot of the people on Liza's podcast are millennials though, right?
Yeah, but that's what, well, I don't know. Liza's got a mix, but they are younger. But I think the people that hang out with Liza in the shop are people that have kind of grown up around bikes or know somebody that actually rides. You know, like Liza's a rider.
Yeah.
She's not just building bikes to put on display someplace. So to get back to what's going on, there's been an industry initiative kind of in secret, not really secret, but just kind of quietly to build up ridership. And one of the things we're going to do with all the other podcasts that Liza gets involved is we're going to produce a t-shirt that says, ask me about motorcycles on the front. It's going to have all the podcast logos on the back, but we want to give them to you guys because you guys are riders and we want you to be the ambassadors of this thing to get ridership up because
it
only
goes. Don't
want
to actually have to talk to anyone, so that's going to be you.
Right. You guys are.
They just like to record themselves talking.
Actually, an entire episode on Misfits about, do you think you're an ambassador for motorcycles or not? And it was really cool to see all the different responses, right? Because some people are like, no, I'm in this for myself. But most of them were like, yeah, of course I am. People want to talk about bikes and I love bikes and I want to talk about bikes and I'm addicted to motorcycles, so why wouldn't I talk about it? That's really cool, that t-shirt and everybody, you know, having the same kind of shirt. That's awesome.
Yeah, even if you're in it for yourself, think about the ramifications if the industry takes a hit.
Yeah.
So you might not be able to get the gear that you want. A local dealership may close. You know, there'll be less online sources for gear, which then may drive the cost up because there's not as much competition. You know, you look at the market, like the adventure market, that's been really growing steadily. Now that before there was one game in town when it came to accessories and it was expensive. Now there's healthy competition out there, so prices are coming down. So, you know, and I'm not, you guys don't have to be involved, but if we get a bunch of shirts from Liza, you guys are going to be the first ones that are going to get them.
We're in.
So we'll be sending you guys.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That sounds great. I mean, we had a local Yamaha dealership go out last year just because of lack of sales. And both of my best friends, they both ride Yamaha FZ6s, and they bought these Yamahas through Turcos Yamaha that was in Rutland, went out of business, totally liquidated. And it's just really sad to see that. It's just, you run down the road and now you just see an empty Yamaha dealer. And that's the thing in Vermont, is it's super hard up here. I'm passionate. I ride. I talk about riding. I talk about how it impacts my life and how it enriches my life. And
it's going to benefit all of us. Ken, you've been really silent. You're like, fuck this. I'm not talking to anybody.
Well, just putting my kids to bed. I just came back, so I got back on again.
Well, you heard the conversation. I mean, what are your thoughts on this? Would you wear that shirt around?
Yeah, as much as I could, I would. And I think being on your bike every day and commuting on a regular basis is a great representation as well, because you know, you may see all the cars around you as you commute on the same stretch every day, but they'll probably recognize you because you're the only bike out there. You know, so if you're always commuting on the highway at this stretch set of time, people will see you more often. And if you're doing it day in and day out, that's going to really promote the cause, I guess.
Absolutely. Plus, people will talk to you about it at work. You know, like, oh, I didn't know you had a bike. Or like, what's that cost you a month to have? You know, how much money do you save in gas? And it's, you know, they have the National Ride to Work Day. That's one time a year. But if we increase the amount of awareness about it, it also leads to things like motorcycle only parking, you know, where it's closer to wherever you're at or covered for that matter. This is just something we're all riders. You know, Chris and I don't do this show for any other reason other than the fact that we love motorcycles and like riding, and it's really for you guys. So that's why we don't want the industry to take a hit. So we're going to do our part, however small it is, to increase awareness in motorcycling. And all kinds of motorcycles. You know, we'll make fun of cruisers and stuff like that. But to me, it doesn't matter as long as you're riding. So if you go out and you buy some lightweight, you know, a 250 or a 200 van, or you're buying a Dynaglide or a KTM 1290, I don't care as long as you're riding.
It's kind of excessive.
A Dynaglide's excessive, but
Liza had a couple other points that were pretty interesting. She's talking about getting mom to ride, right? Get the moms to ride. Once you get the moms riding, the rest of the family goes with them. And one of the things that Scott and I do is if we see kids around, we'll invite kids to come over and honk the horn and rev the engine and stuff like that. We had a really, we were at a bar one time. We came out and there was a special needs child that was getting into a truck, and he was pointing at our bikes, and we mentioned to the grandparents, say, bring him out. We let him sit on the bikes and let him rev the engines. And I think we made an impression on this kid just by doing stuff like that. Get the moms, get the kids involved. That was a really genuine. I was really excited by that, and having this kid involved with the bikes. The smile on his face, I'll never forget that.
Nice.
Doug, I had a similar experience today. I mean, I've just picked up, got my Bandit 1200 back, and, you know, and there's a little kid just going, mommy, motorcycle. I'm like, yeah, this is a Suzuki, and da-da-da-da-da. And then I engaged the kid. He's probably like 7 or 8 years old, but who knows? Maybe that lasting impression by the time 10 years from now, he's going to go, I remember seeing that bike in the back of that truck. I want to have something like that. So it's important that we kind of show it to the kids. And, you know, it's cool. It's nothing taboo about it. It's just a way of life. It's fun.
I think everybody comes to it from a different place. Like, my dad instilled the passion in me when I was a kid about talking about racing, and then bringing, you know, he would go on a business trip and come back with some little die-cast metal motorcycle for me. So by the time I was like 10, I had a collection of these things. And that's all I ever thought about was wanting to ride. Some people get it late in life, or their neighbor buys a bike and they're like, wow, I never really thought about it. But, you know, Larry's splitting every weekend, going on a trip, and looks like he's having a lot of fun. Doug, you were late to the party, right? I mean, what was it? Was it seeing Scott's bike, or what was it that got you to want to start riding?
No, actually, Scott's the late bloomer. I'm a boomeranger, right? So I had a bunch of bikes when I was a kid. Yeah, I had my motorcycle license when I was 15 in Virginia and stuff. So I had KZ 900 and all that. And then, you know, the kids come along and you kind of put the bikes away for a little bit, but I boomeranged and come back. But Scott's the late bloomer, right? Scott's got the fun story.
Yeah, I just barely have 2 years on a bike, and I'm almost 50. I'm almost 48. So.
Yeah, you got
it. Took me so long, man. I could have been having this fun all this time.
Well, sometimes it's just, I mean, like, Scott, you and I both shoot, so we know how much fun that is, you know? And that's something that some people never even think about doing. This just doesn't even cross their radar. And that's a lot of sometimes where you're raised. But the motorcycle thing is, if you grow up and you don't know anything about it, you never met anybody that had one, your family's like dead against it. I mean, that was a hurdle I had as a kid, is I had to hide my first motorcycle I bought from my mom, because she was like, there's no way you're on a motorcycle. So that's the other stigma we got to get past. When, like, Liza talks about getting the moms to ride, that's a huge hurdle for some people.
My grandparents rode, and my nana, my grandmother, worked at a Harley shop selling merchandise on the floor. And I used to go, because I was homeschooled, I would spend a lot of time. My parents just drop us off for months at a time, and I would go every day she worked. So it was.
What did you think, Jess, when you were there looking at bikes? Was it something where you thought, could you see yourself riding, or did you think it wasn't like for girls?
No, I just wanted to go
you?
Back to sand in the river to get on their ATV. I don't want to be here coloring on the ground. Ungrateful little kid.
No, so anyway,
the bikes didn't really give me much of an impression that young. I was already on something that gave me adrenaline, and I wasn't looking for anything else right then. Plus, they were like big, huge Harley. And I was just this tiny baby kid.
Well, and that in the
but I was still around. That's it. Also it was great.
that's also an industry problem too, because Harley-Davidson's biggest competition is their used market. They have, you know, they're great about getting people in the door. They're great about selling a lifestyle. The problem is there's not a lot of lightweight or midweight bikes for starter bikes, you know, or for people that don't want to ride a 900 pound motorcycle. So people buy a bike and then they don't have a good experience because the bike might be a little bit too big for them to begin with. And then they end up selling it and then they don't get back into motorcycling. It's not like they sell it and say, you know what, I'm going to go get a Suzuki or something that I like more for me that's manageable, because they don't want to, it's either being in that hog owners group crowd or not. So I think we can do a lot as owners to change that. And there's nothing wrong with a big cruiser, especially some of these gorgeous bikes for doing long distance, but it's not a bike you want to start with, you know? And honestly, there's guys like Scott that start on a TU250 and that may end up staying on a lightweight. They might not keep the TU. They might go to something different or go to a middleweight, and that's the bike that they have for the rest of their lives and they're comfortable with it. And we want to continue to impress upon people that that's all right. You know, it's part of the ownership experience.
Yeah. So I don't know how many of you guys have listened to the most recent episode of Cleveland Moto. But like, they were actually talking about the same situation. You know, Liza from Motorcycles and Misfits contacted them too. And, you know, Phil has a lot of insight because as a dealer, he gets like a lot of the demographic data from like the Motorcycle Industry Council and stuff like that. And something that was really interesting to hear, you know, motorcycles purchased by women were like originally, you know, for years and years were like maybe 2%. And now they're up to like 8 to 10% of new motorcycles are purchased by women. The numbers are still small because the industry is down as a whole. But like seeing stuff like all like the Women's Safety Night or Babes Ride Out, which, you know, started out as just like a group of women meeting up in Joshua Tree, California. And now there's a East Coast one. There's a dirt only one. Like that part of the market is growing despite the fact that overall the industry is taking a dip.
I think the more we can do to promote the sport to the demographic that's low, it's just better for us all together. If we have more new women riders, they might entice their husbands or boyfriends to also want to try it as well. So I talk to as many people I can that seem to be approachable, you know, when I go out for a ride, and try to share it as much as we can, you know. And you guys got any thoughts on it besides what we've already talked about?
I think Liza's other point was, don't be an asshole when you're driving around on your motorcycle too.
Well, right? Like, hard though.
That is really fucking hard.
I really shouldn't get a 1290 then.
Oh no, you should get a 1290.
The bike is like directly linked to whatever in your brain says be an asshole. Like twist throttle.
No, it's whatever. It's to be a hooligan.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to do third gear wheelies, Crash.
Yeah.
There's nothing like a power wheelie in third gear on that bike, even fourth gear for that matter. Yeah, no. I think we're going to be on the same page with everybody else in this, because we just don't want to see the industry go away, you know, or slump to the point where dealerships close. That's not good for any of us.
Mike, my big concern with the motorcycle market is definitely the direction where self-driving cars are going, self-driving trucks. I mean, truthfully, if we have a motorcycle operated by a human that's trying to interact with a matrix of vehicles that are self-operating, I could see where legislature could try to push the motorcycle market into extinction. So, I mean, in Vermont, it's not going to happen because GPS and cell service is so horrible, but it's definitely a realistic thing to look at, like in Florida and California or Texas, in these huge areas where good cell, good GPS services. I mean, that's a huge concern that I constantly think about. It's like, where are we going to be in 10, 15 years when these self-driving cars start really taking the road? Where's it going to do? Push the motorcycle market out?
Well, it's a distinct possibility, and don't kid yourself. This is already happening. We have a legislator in Florida. If you get the AMA's magazines, you'll read stories every month about some legislator that's calling them murder cycles and wants to outlaw them because somebody they knew got killed or somebody had an injury. You know, it's a personal thing for them. There's a guy in Florida, I can't remember what his name is, but he always tries to introduce legislation in the state of Florida outlawing motorcycles. I mean, flat out outlawing them, not even saying that it's, you know, you can't ride them in certain areas, just saying you can't own them. I mean, I know that's extreme and that's never going to happen now, but you're bringing up a good point about what's going to happen when the safety pundits come out. I mean, we might be stuck with electric bikes because of the emissions thing. Mm-hmm. It'll be like the Rush song, Red Barchetta. You know, we're going to have to hide our motorcycle in the barn and uncover it on the weekend. But
part of me is excited for the self-driving car thing because people are driving around with their cell phones out right now anyway, texting as they go. So I'd rather them not be driving their car while they're texting. They can just let the car drive. And I think there's going to be a period, at least for the foreseeable future, when we're sharing the road with these cars. And I think it only gets safer for us because a car that's being, you know, driven by software is going to behave itself. It's not going to cut you off unnecessarily. It's not going to do something stupid. It's not going to be texting and driving and run into you from behind and all this other stuff. But then I'm not able to imagine what it's like, you know, 30, 50 years from now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Crash, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to kind of branch off that, you know, I've got a lot of kids and my four oldest are all adults now. And my two boys have gone and taken the MSF, right? And that's my fault. And their friends have gone and taken the MSF, and that's my fault too. And so if I can evangelize a little bit to the next generation, I think we should all consider doing that. Mm-hmm. My two younger boys who are too young to do it want to do it as soon as they're old enough, you know? But like my dad was a motorcyclist before I was born, and then after I moved out, he got another motorcycle again. But the whole time I was growing up at home, there was no bike, right? So he made the choice not to share that, not to pass that on, right? And his dad and three brothers used to drive Indian motorcycles all over Louisiana and Texas back in the 20s, right? So that was like a generational thing that stopped. And then for whatever reason, now I've started it back up and pushed it on to the next kids. But I think you hit a real good point, Steve, when you were talking about a lot of these kids don't really care about getting their license, right? One of my boys was much more interested in going and getting the MSF stuff done than getting a driver's license. It's like the driver's license, who cares about that?
Well, you know, it's also the point for a lot of young people too, is the initial cost of ownership is much less than a car in most cases, mm-hmm. You know, and especially if you live in an area where you don't have a really long commute to work and everything's pretty close by, having a bike just makes more sense. Not to mention the fact that you've got an outlet to get away on when you're not working. You know, even we joke about Florida, but even taking a ride down to the beach is fun. You know, it's nice. So I think the more we can do is whether we like it or not, good or bad, we're all ambassadors for the sport, for the lifestyle, for everything. So whether we make a positive impression on people or like Jed's and I were an asshole when we're on a motorcycle, you know, it's just, we're going to continue to try to support this for a purely selfish reason for ourselves. So as soon as we get these shirts, you guys are going to get them. We'll get your sizes. We'll send them out to you. And we're going to continue on this campaign.
Yeah. So I think we're going to wrap things up. You can find us on all the social medias. Just look for Cafe Racer Podcast. We also have CafeRacerPodcast.com. Go to CafeRacerPodcast.com/contest for all the contest goodness. Doug and Scott, you guys have a presence. Why don't you tell people where they can find the two of you?
That's easy. Just go to amenmoto.com. Takes you to our YouTube page. And from there, there's links to all our other stuff. But it's mostly about the YouTube.
All right.
And they produce some great videos. So if you like watching motorcycle videos, go check them out.
You just say that because you're in them and we make fun of Jeds.
Right.
Not hard to do, Scotty. Not hard to do.
All right. Well, thank you all for being on the show. It was super fun. I can't wait to do this again. I don't know when I'm going to be able to do this again, to be honest. I may not be on the next one due to deployment things. But I'm going to be in port a lot for my deployment, so I might be able to jump on a few times while I am gone. There's really no telling what's going to happen. So without further ado, get out and ride and tell people about it.
See ya.